Welcome to the third hour of the BIM Heroes podcast. In this third hour, we're going to talk about the stage of technology. And we're going to be joined by the two to my left here, Caroline and Argelica.
Argelia.
Got you. Thank you. Would you both introduce yourselves?
Yes, I am Argelia Bárcena, and I am a regional design technology manager at Gensler, covering the Northwest region. And I also teach part-time at some universities in San Francisco.
Nice. My name is Carolina Fong. I'm the co-founder and digital engineering manager at Accienta. We are Autodesk resellers, and we help companies with their digital transformation journey and beyond. Glad to be here.
I want to talk a little bit about the voices of design technology and where that is going. So a lot about what you're going to be speaking about today.
Yes. And that is focused on professionals who have both the expertise of design and technology in one, which have been called unicorns in the industry, because people like those, we bring both skills to the table, and the importance of that, of having those skills in the professional practice, and how can we grow a new generation of practitioners who have those skills as well and offer them. Because right now there's we see a gap with emerging professionals, and we want to, of course, close that gap.
And how do you see that on your side of where that's going?
Yes, I agree with that completely. Like, from the industry perspective, all the companies are struggling to hire the right talent, to retain talent as well. So this is one of the key factors that will, I think, transform the industry in the coming years. And part of that, it's because the newly graduates, they are not coming with all the knowledge that they should. You know, technology is moving so fast that keeping up with that, sometimes it's a challenge. But I would say it's more of a mindset. Once you know how to self-learn and, search for resources, either online or in person, you can continue that journey. And that's the type of mindset that companies should focus on hiring, more than a CV or, the previous style of hiring.
Do you think that, from the design aspect of it, when students are coming out of university or college, do you feel like they're well prepared, or do we still have a long way to go?
They still have a long way to go. I mean, you learn a lot from being in the profession, and it takes a few years to learn from it, because you, I don't want to speak for all universities because they're all different, but I've seen from the ones I've taught on, they're all different in their curriculum and how they teach and what they exclude, what they include. And collaboration, for example, is one of them, right? How do you collaborate in an office?
Between the different aspects of the single office that you work in, but then in the greater picture.
Yes. Yes, with other disciplines, with your team, even the tools you use for collaboration, right? That's something that they're not exposed to. So when you have them work, how do you set them up for success, right? Or how do you get them there too?
Yeah. And what are you trying to do on your front to assist that process of getting them ready for the industry? And that's for both of you.
You can start.
Okay. I can start. One of them, well, there's different paths. One, if we partner with universities, it's really important to partner with professional working people that can help build a curriculum with the school, right? And also engage in organizations such as, I am very much engaged in the American Institute of Architects. I am a director currently for the San Francisco chapter. And with that, the importance of technology has grown so much from previous years before it didn't exist. And now it has its own, committee within that organization. And it's very much an important part of project delivery now. So it's involving organizations, involving the companies, it's involving the schools. And also once, when we move away from the students and just we focus on our practitioners, people who have been there working for several years, technology, how it advances, right? So fast. So people are used to working a certain way for, 10 years, let's say, right? How do you change the mindset of you need to learn something new? Because the profession evolves and you have to evolve with it.
And on your side, how do you take that and push that out to the different firms and things like that?
Yes, it's an interesting question because, as you said, there's a generational gap right now. We have people in the industry with a lot of knowledge. They know a lot about construction, architecture, and all the disciplines. But then we have a new generation of talent that is coming to the industry, may or may not know the latest tools, collaboration methods, et cetera, out of school. So it's important to bridge that gap. And it's usually the best way by making them work together. So it's like a mentor and mentee stage. It's not something formal, but you can make groups, you know, once they join the workforce.
Soft skills, technical skills, some that are really good at the technical skills, some that are, because it's not a job.
Knowledge transfer.
It's a profession, right? All of us have to take all these years of experience and you become really good at what you do. But you have to also realize that the industry is so vast and it's changing so much that you're, even at the end of your career, you're going to be really good at one of those things. And understand you can't attack it all. It's just too large to
exactly.
do.
Exactly. And it's great that you mentioned soft skills because yes. they say that most of the jobs going forward and the coming decade, soft skills will be crucial.
It will. Mm-hmm.
Like we are used to focusing on technology. And of course, technology is important. But to drive that change and that changing mindset, you need to have the appropriate soft skills
yes.
to be able to communicate, to lead those teams. And
not just communicate to people that understand what you're talking about, but more so on people that have no idea.
Yes, and build trust with them.
And exactly,
because,
and build that trust.
Yes.
You know, the big piece of this, when you look at technology as a whole, it's that idea that you take the time, and a lot of it's self-study, right? It's a lot mm-hmm. of failure of
yes.
using the technology
yes.
to like kind of fail through it, and then you get better.
It's
as
the best
a whole.
Way to learn.
It is.
To practice
yeah.
and to use it.
So, no doubt.
No one should be afraid of trying, of, you know, testing. We always do it. When we do project implementations of any type of software, we do like a proof of concept,
yes.
which is where you test everything, both from the technical perspective, the workflows, anything that you want to apply. And this builds that trust and that builds confidence on the software, on the skills, on the process itself. And then it's easier to deploy at a larger scale once you tested it first.
And with that, communication is key. It's not just between the different consultants and the GC or the client. It's actually communicating interpersonally between the different pieces of technology. And there's this whole concept now, and when you go to universities and you talk to them, they're still in this mindset. I've talked about this multiple times already today, that there's a right answer. And there is right answers and there's wrong answers.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no back of the book, right? There's not, oh, this is the exact answer that's going to solve this problem. And for some, it drives them crazy. But at the end of the day, when you really look at it and you start to use this technology to solve these problems, you understand that there's a lot of great ways to solve that problem. And I just want to talk about that concept. Like, where
yes,
does that go?
It's true. Technology? And I agree with what you're saying because the industry and the technology keeps evolving. So there is no fixed right or wrong answer, like you're saying. To give you an example, if you ask me 2 years ago or 3 years ago, before we were even talking about AI, for example, mm-hmm. how to solve something, I would have an idea. Now it has changed
right.
because if you use AI, it can help you with different things. For example, searching through documents, finding some, you know, keyword or something faster.
Yes.
So the process itself would change and how we use technology. And this keeps evolving. So we have to constantly adapt and just be comfortable with change. I would say that's
right.
Yes. It's exploring, you know, it's curiosity. I think is key here to discover innovation. And having that curiosity will lead you to explore different ways to get to a solution. And, you know, many times you're going to find more than one way to reach it. And so that is an important part also to build.
How is cloud collaboration changing the way that we design?
It has changed a lot, you know, for the better, I think. And I think during the pandemic, it was proof that
it can work.
It can work,
yeah.
Yes, because we were all forced to, whether people liked it or not, we all had to, right? And it makes it for, you know, faster collaboration, easier
mm-hmm.
access, and it's being used a lot now.
Right.
I said the majority of firms, right? If not all of them.
Yeah, I'd say it's really driving that conversation that we need, because before cloud collaboration, it was all about the authoring tools, right? So where do
yes.
you design? Where you do? But each company,
and
each
they were
consultant,
so heavy.
Yes. Yeah. Heavy, yes. You know, in the machines and everything. And also each consultant, each contractor and each owner would have their own tools.
Correct.
Like up to them what they choose. But cloud collaboration is forcing that conversation between the different stakeholders.
And then licensing. That was always the challenge too, with like, you know, with Revit, like you had to own every single year of Revit. And then if you didn't, you know, it's one of the downfalls, right? It's that non-backwards compatibility. And so you're constantly with these massive family databases. And now that's even going to the cloud. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. It's helped management.
Cloud viewers now.
Yeah.
Management has improved a lot. File management with that too.
Absolutely.
It's been great.
I mean, how many files can an architecture firm have in terms of families and everything? That come? I mean, thousands,
thousands,
right? I mean,
yes.
Yeah. And so how do you keep gigs of just families stored on a server trying to pull those down to do that? I just think that that whole idea is changing. And I think some of that is being driven by generative design. Going back to the point of it's not one thing that solves it. Here's the different solutions of how to do it and going forward with that.
And then we also have, you know, companies that work with other locations.
Yes.
So somebody from the United States works with somebody in Europe. So having it on all the files in the cloud, it's much more efficient.
And it's not just delegated between the firms, but it's also delegated out to all the different consultants that
you
have to deal with.
Yep. And all of these systems are permission-based.
Yes.
So that's great. You can have, like you said, different firms in different physical locations. You can do version control, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go back to files. What you were saying about even the version of the authoring or the year, you can view the files on the cloud.
Correct.
Like, so people who don't have a license can use the cloud collaboration system to see and to add comments. Yeah.
Because that's always been one of the challenging pieces of it, is that like when you went to go and open Revit, you had to put at the back of the file name, which year of Revit, well, for some reason in the file type, it didn't say 2018, 2019, 2020. And I think that was always a disservice, because then you got to open it and it says, oh, it's in the upgrading process. Now, here we go. We're going to go through that. And then at the beginning, it was this fear that you were going to lose data along the way. Like the family would be corrupted along the way. So I just think that it's just taken a huge step forward in that. Yeah. I mean, any comments on that and where that's going?
Well, I think, I mean, there's more to it, because there's some companies, some teams are just scratching the surface of cloud collaboration.
Of course.
There's, you know, even tracking issues that have been collaboration. There's so much in it that there's a room to learn. There's room to grow. And so it's just going to get better.
Here's the challenge I see, though, with cloud, is that the model twofold. The model is dynamic. And we're still in this process of SD, DD, CD. So we talked about it earlier, that digital stamp of when that occurs. Could we get to the point of two questions, an almost loaded question. The first is, in certain parts of the world, it's not a contract document. It is solely just something to assist in creation of the plans. And then on the second part of that question, and the first part was, do you believe that it should be a contract document, which is kind of loaded. And then the second piece of that is, if we get to these different cutoff stages, and that is what has defined the budgets as we work our way through design, is there a way in the future that it could be versioned with a digital stamp that says that if you mess with this point, this is the stage in which it's been completed at, and it would break the stamp?
So to that, I would add that in the cloud collaboration tools, for us in particular, we work with Autodesk Construction Cloud. And there, everything is recorded in the system. Who did what, when? So there is no way of saying, I didn't do this change, I didn't. So you have the entire history, and
right.
Clients love that. But from the contract perspective, it really depends on the project. Like I know, for example, in the US, you can have design build or design bid build projects. But coming from the Middle East, most of the projects over there are design bid build. So it's really cut off, you know, the different stages of the project. And what cloud collaboration is also trying to achieve is to get a better integration of the entire project lifecycle, not just the design, the construction, or like different use cases.
Because it's dynamic. It's not static.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but we're trying to make something that's dynamic static. For years we've done it. Yeah.
But you are really, you hit the nail with the contract point, because it's all about the contract. In the end, it doesn't matter if you are a consultant, a contractor, or an owner.
Nope.
the contract is guiding the way you are collaborating and you're going to give those deliverables and all. So maybe we need new types of contracts that can, you know, address these issues.
And do you think that it's more of a collaboration of all the partners all the way from beginning to end? Or do you just think that it's, you know, architects, consultants, and GCs still?
I mean, from beginning to end, it's ideal. Yeah. All of them. It's better. The earlier you set up the process, the smoother it'll come up.
It'll come through.
Yes. Yeah.
And then what do you feel like on the digital stamp process? Do you think that would help in the cutoff stages? Because that's my biggest worry when I talk to different design firms is we're providing you the model and now it's collaborative where now you could go in there and we could be in the middle of designing something, but we're not contractually held to that yet. We're just in the process of trying to work through the issue that you've proposed to us.
Yes.
So don't use it yet. We're still not ready. And then when, as soon as we give you the next, let's say a DD or CD set, we're ready for it. Sometimes it might not be complete because we're not supposed to be at this stage yet, but we might be in the process of getting to that stage. And we don't want you to take this seriously until we hit that stage. Because, I mean, if it's always dynamic, it's always changing. Yes, you constantly see those changes, but those cutoffs are important in contracts. And especially when we get into the building of a project, ASIs come out, there has to be a hard line because you could be in the process of trying to solve that problem. And yet you're not ready to release that.
Yes, it's a little bit of a, you know, tricky thing there because contracts and the model and like a BIM execution plan, for example, it's a live document.
Yes.
So it shouldn't be part of the contract because it's evolving throughout the stage of the project. So if it was part of the contract, then it would, maybe it says something that
it's
applies.
It's not mature enough.
Yes, I'm not sure enough, exactly. Yes.
But I'm not held to that. I'm held to AIA standard or whatever the standard may be in the country that you're in. And that's what I'm contractually required to give you at that stage.
Yes. So anything that's live, you know, evolving, dynamic, I don't think it should be part of the contract.
Right.
I don't feel like it.
Do you think that like stamping that on a technology front where it says, all right, it's dynamic. We're going to continue. We're going to give access to it, but note.
Similar to a not for construction stamp that used to be on the plan.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. That could happen.
Get a good idea of where we're going with it, but we're not ready to say this is what we're going to do.
That could happen. And then you could say after this, let's say, version, no one can make any changes.
Right.
This is like the official. Mm-hmm. You know,
or if somebody that, because the other piece of this is that the, you know, you're giving the model over, you've done a lot of work to it, and then you give it over to a GC or you give it over to a subcontractor to use to do their work. There's always that fear that they're messing with it. And like, what did you do? And then it messes with the overall design. And then there's a confrontational relationship that says, well, that's what was in the model. But yeah, but you changed it. So how does the technology help in that to like give some, you know, peace of mind that like, yes, it might change, but it's adding to it, not versus like taking something away.
So again, but going back to technology, for example, in ACC, there is a functionality in which you can compare two models,
to
Revit models.
Yes.
So instantly it will tell you with colors, red, green, and yellow, what was modified, added, removed, etc. So let's say you already delivered this model to, let's say, the contractor and they change it. You could go back to the system
and
with
see
that.
The difference.
Yeah, exactly.
But also on that end, if it's not a contract document, you know, at this point in time, you know, details and different things and notes and are all added to the drawing itself. But in the model, it might not be there, but it has to come into the equation when you're trying to build the project. That's the challenge with the model. When you see it in, you know, different countries like the US and Canada, that's different from here because we don't have the standards that Europe has. That says, yep, this is what's going to be used. And if it's got to be at this stage, and then
I see in the Middle East, for example, it's funny because even if someone is handing over a model, they still ask you for drawings. Like there is no way to say, you know, this is the information is in the model. Like you're saying, you need to do detailed drawings.
And we don't know what has changed. We don't have any idea, you know, where to go from.
So this point is interesting. Do you think that we will reach a point in which the model itself will be a complete deliverable? Or we still...
I see it in Europe. I don't see it in the U.S.
Yes,
I think it's going to be a hard sell.
We are not there in the Middle East either.
Yeah, like it's... it has to fundamentally change the way that we think about contracts. It just is. I mean, it's such a larger conversation than just the technology that forms it. And I think it comes down to it. It took so long for drawings. I mean, it just took four. I mean, we're not very far removed from plan tables where we drew all this by hand.
Right.
I mean, and so it, look how long it took to just create 2D blocks that are still used today as part of details. But these systems like that we're talking about, architecture as a whole, from the client's point of view, is pushing GCs to build some of these absolutely gorgeous structures. But some of these details are really complex, how these things come together, and where we need to get to a point where in a 3D environment where we can actually see how that interfaces with the different pieces. Yeah. Because the 2D, what happens is that we believe that the detail works because that's what we used in the past. But this particular instance could have two systems coming together, and it's not detailed exactly what that detail looks like in real life.
I mean, it would make it more powerful to have that model and for them to see it. But it would add to it. I don't think it would be a replacement at this point.
Of course, yeah. And it's just not there yet. The other piece of it, too, that I think that would be really useful is codes being built into the authoring tool. Mm-hmm. And I think we're close to it. But like if we could do code back checks and, you know, just with local municipalities of different things, because when we're coordinating, we're coordinating. And we're trying to do the best of our ability in interpreting the code. But if we could bring people into that collaborative environment technology-wise, that would take it a step further, too. The last couple of hours, one of the things that frustrates architects and frustrates everybody is specifications. They're awful to put together. They're not something that's enjoyful to put together, whether it's the person that's physically putting it together or the person that's interpreting it, actually going and buying the different materials. Do you think that that's something that technology could take hold and let's say, okay, all the manufacturers have their different families that has all this data that's built into it. Why can't I take that? I've selected that, and now it provides that base specifications. I think we're close. You're starting to see some of it starting to be built into these products, but I think that will go a long way too.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. What do you think on that?
Not only from the specifications, but like what you said, also, let's say a marketplace where you could just buy something. If have the database of all the items that you need for your building or whatever project you are doing, it's great.
And you're not dealing with
transparent, even from a marketing perspective.
And you're not dealing with just a generic family. You're dealing with a parametric family that actually could be built in the real life.
And has data embedded.
In fact, because I mean, what the long-term goal is, we don't want to get back to a stage of the world where we're on paper plans.
Right.
I mean, 60 years ago, we did that, and now they're falling apart. You know, what is our commitment to the next generation, next 50 years? Did they get a model? And is it accurate? Is it complete? You know, if not, it's we're right back to the same conversation we're having with the paper. It's just digital. You know, and we gotta push past that point.
Yes, model accuracy. That's another thing that we have to push for.
Yes, yeah, and you know, whatever you're seeing within the actual design, you're seeing in the real drawings. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think we need to go back to basics, which is how do we build better, faster, with the quality required, etc., and not get caught up with the details, which is like you said, either paper based or drawings or the model. The whole point of it is how can we collaborate? And I think those deliverables and contracts, it's all about that conversations between consultants and contractors, because they don't want to take the accountability and responsibility of their share. You know, sometimes the consultant will say, no, the contractor didn't build what we specified.
And it becomes controversial. Yeah. Like it gets really like at odds because, you know, contracts are written where it's with the owner and then with the GC. And it's just this constant battle. Like, you know, Mr. Owner, you can't afford that. Well, we had this conversation. Maybe we can afford that.
And who pays that? The owner.
Yeah, exactly. And they look at both of us trying to solve these problems because they're like, we hired you to solve this problem for us. But oh, by the way, but we need to do this in a very short period of time. So, and it's very complex. Like these projects are not, they're not easy. They've never really have been easy to begin with. But like today with all the different ways that, you know, we're pushing the envelope of construction. It's going to get to that point. What What technologies as a whole do you see really changing the industry?
I think cloud collaboration, but at a bigger scale and with more things, because we have different areas, different processes right now in cloud collaboration systems. But when we have that entire project lifecycle, and we are missing one part, which is super important, we haven't mentioned operations and maintenance.
Of course.
That's where the majority of the cost of the project will be and the longer time.
And that needs to be developed all the way from
the
beginning. You have to start
with
the
end in mind. We need the data. Yep. We need the all these things we are talking about. So it's important to carry the right data across to that stage. And for that, I think when we have like, let's say, not a cloud collaboration, a cloud solution that encompasses everything, that's going to be, I think, the biggest change in the industry.
What do you think?
And you know, currently we see some disciplines who are not on board with, let's say, Revit, right?
Right.
And the rest of the team is.
I mean,
so
even
it's
today,
not
we're still having the problem with
yes.
getting on board with using Revit.
Yes.
I mean, we've been talking about this
it's
for
so
like
many
15 years.
Exactly.
I mean,
it's perplexing.
And maybe I was talking to Jason and others at Autodesk earlier this week. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, is it something where AutoCAD still exists and we're trying to phase it into Revit, all the functionality of that, or are we still like splitting the two
mm-hmm.
and still having that split between two different things? Because
yes.
I don't think it ever gets to a point where we have that separation unless they start to combine some of those tools.
Yes, that's a good point.
Yeah,
I think technology will be driven by the cloud. And for example, there's a new product called Autodesk Forma. I don't know if you've heard about it. So
yes.
it's completely in the cloud. You don't need to install anything in your machine anymore. So I think that's where things
And you
may
can
go.
Do some really complex, you know, type stuff.
Yes. Analysis.
The only challenge that I see with it, and you both can correct me because I don't use it every single day, is can it create something that's not physically possible? Like, can it physically, like everything that it creates, is it something that we can physically build in the real world? That's the challenge, because some of these, you know, the beauty and the curse of Revit is the shapes, right? So the good thing is that if you create something in Revit that is not a proper system, all the data tells you something's wrong. But when we get into some of these really like add-on or new products where we can do some absolutely awesome different shapes of buildings, we get into this ideas, can it be done?
I think it's not there yet,
yeah.
but I see where things are going. And
yep.
maybe we will be pleasantly surprised
where
in
that
the
goes.
Future. Yeah, where that goes. I'm excited to see where it goes.
I don't see it as a big problem because just like any other software, right, you can do shapes and that are not buildable.
Right. Yeah.
Masses in Revit, for example, right?
But the big focus is in that comment is more along the lines of, do we want to sell something to a client that we can't construct? That's the you know, we don't want to give false hope to something. I think that the industry as a whole, we struggle sometimes because we talk to our client and we say, you know, this is what you want, this is what we're going to provide, and this is what it's going to look like. But I feel like, you know, we always fall short, not because, let's say, we want to not do it. It's because, you know, budget constraints or something like that kind of falls short.
You know, because it's so new, I think it's going to rely a lot on feedback
yes.
from us. So the program is just going to get better. Based
yes.
on the feedback.
What other technologies other than cloud collaboration do you see changing the industry?
Sensors. When you talk about digital twin,
mm-hmm.
Imagine a smart building where different things can be, you know, measured and controlled from temperature, humidity, light.
And do you see a lot of access to maintenance groups that are saying, yep, we want to do this, that we want to push that forward, or is
not
it a hard
yet.
Sell?
The operation and maintenance teams are still way behind construction, I would say.
And
before,
I feel like that's the whole world.
Between consultants, contractor, and owners, the headache, let's say, were the contractors,
right.
like the more resistance, because consultants are used to technology from Revit and all the owners. Nowadays, I think it's more about operation and maintenance teams that
yes.
are still new and they still rely on legacy systems and
right.
they are not
if you get
part
a high,
of the conversation.
Like a high-tech client, like a data center or a, you know, hospital or something
mm-hmm.
like that, they're going to be completely on board. The challenge
yes.
that you see, though, across the rest of the industry is, if I can do it the same way I've been doing it for the last 20
mm-hmm.
years, why am I going to change that? You know, and it's so sad because you go into their facilities, you're like, how is this still running? And like, it's just, it's kind of scary. It's like, whoa.
the ones that should drive the change are the owners, because in the end, yes, they pay for everything. So, for example, someone who's going to build, let you say, a hospital or something, and you're going to maintain it and operate it for 30 years.
And the complexities of the systems that keep it clean, keep it all the way through and through. It's not the hospitals of old where it's just one system. There's the complexity of all these different systems, but like duplicates of the different systems and redundancies. And I mean, it's not to the point where you can look at just a drawing and say, I've got it all covered and this is how I've got to maintain that. It's much more dynamic.
Even how they translate the information. Sometimes they rely on their own systems.
No just doubt.
For like not really go back to the project information as
but,
much.
But then you also see some of the high-end clients that take it and just run with it. And there is some really cool stuff that you're starting to see on the data center side where they're taking the model and it's not even just of a static facility management. They're actually using it to run their facility through and through, all the way from beginning to end, which I think is just awesome. What are some of the methodology that you're starting to see in terms of technology? Is there, and what, let me, you know, kind of rephrase it in a way, is there a lot of technology that's out there that people are struggling to bring into their tech stack that because they don't understand what it does, that it doesn't formulate into the industry well?
There are a few key elements to this. Like when we talk about digital transformation, I would say there are three: people, processes, and platforms. Yes. And then another one which drives everything, which is information, the data, which data you need, etc. So when it comes to specifically, can you just repeat, sorry, the last part?
Yeah, the part of, you know, you've got different methodology of different ways of thinking. So in the ways of a construction or AEC industry, there's a lot of slang terms of how we address the industry as a whole. Well, they're starting to progress into technology. And with doing so, a lot of people are trying to understand what these processes are meant to solve. So the workflow.
To understand the application.
Understand
of
what
course.
They're trying. And then
yes.
The technology, like, what is its purpose of what it's trying to solve? Mm-hmm.
That's why the process is really important. And the people, because that will drive the technology that we require.
Absolutely.
So what we see in companies, sometimes they purchase technology based on either politics or, you know, the company that
or somebody
out.
Else is doing it better than I am. And I got to buy this because
exactly.
They're using it.
Exactly. But there was a real analysis of these are our key workflows. You know, we need to make this more efficient, which is the best technology out there that can serve that purpose. But that would be the ideal situation.
You see a lot of that where like, all right, there's our competition. They're going out and buying something. And all of a sudden they're like, they don't know how to use it.
All the time. But that's why it's really important, like for us, for technology providers and consultants to make a real success story. Because like you said, everyone wants to copy each other. And it's like, what are those contractors using? What are those consultants using? And then
what are you certified to
actually
use?
It's a feeling of, you know, feeling.
I'm not the only one.
They're missing out on something. That's when they want to participate too.
And they feel like that their competitive edge is reduced. And so like, it's such a small line between the competitive nature of this business and that small line could be the difference. Even if they don't know how to use it, they just see it and they're like, oh, that guy, they know how to use it. So I might pick them because
and
of that.
Like Argelia was mentioning, COVID was really a game changer.
It was.
Before, always technology, no a cost. This is not part of the project now. No, companies know that it's important for their competitive edge, for their operations.
Yes. Whoever was not, you know, high up in technology skills in companies fell behind during the pandemic because what did they do when they couldn't access servers?
They slowed way down.
And how they collaborate, how they communicate with each other. So they were much more slow than other companies who were already using it. So we saw that.
And now they're ahead of the game with it. Whoever was there before, like we have some clients that were doing cloud collaboration even before COVID. So when COVID hit for them, it was an easy transition. Have all the documents there, no paper based.
For us, that's how we were. Some of the projects were, not all of them. But when it hit, all of them. Within 2 weeks, all the projects were migrated into the cloud and everyone had to learn how to use it. There were no excuses anymore.
You know, what do you see as those impacts of what you saw through the pandemic and where you're starting to see now where it's not just, you know, one software statically over to the side of it. They're like, you know what, we have a position here to integrate with this, and then this leads to this process, and this leads to that, and then you go from there.
Now there are very nice no-code tools like Workato. I don't know if you've heard about it. Mm-hmm. It can help you integrate different systems from ACC to SharePoint to Dropbox, other things, and it's all based on triggers, and you don't need to know a lot about coding. So this is great, because before, when you wanted to build a custom development, you need a team. It's expensive. Not all the companies could afford something like that. And like you said, it's hard to escape having a tech stack of different technologies. I don't know a company that uses just one product. Or
it's tough because there are also some of them that are similar, right? And which one should you pick and why? So it's a matter of
is it
testing.
A long-term play or is it a short-term play? Is it this is going to lead the industry into the next generation?
Yes.
This is going to, you know, die a slow death.
That's also important because companies in the technology side of construction come and go all the time.
They do.
That's true.
Kind of like, you know, changing your socks every day. So it's like, oh, I'm going to spend thousands of dollars on this new technology. And within 5 years, it's gone. And I've spent not only the upfront cost of buying it, but I've spent all the money of training people how to use it and develop that over time. So how do you implement technology the right way? I feel like this whole room is trying to solve that problem.
Yes, I mean, it's like one time a comment was made that said, Revit is going to be dead in 5 years. that was like 10 or more years.
Easy. 10 or more years ago, right? Ago, yeah.
And I said, no, it's not. Sure
it evolved, right?
It evolved, but it was this mentality of people working a certain way, and I'm not going to evolve with technology.
Yeah, it just similar to like what Autodesk did back in the in the 80s. It fundamentally changed the way that you deliver a design or a project. And I feel like, you know, with Autodesk, they didn't wait. They said that's going to fundamentally change the way that AutoCAD functioned. And they said, look, we're coming in and we're gonna take ownership of that. And now and today, as I was talking to Jason and others, you know, it's the fundamental product that's used all over the world. And there's other products that are used, but like fundamentally, that's the one that's used the most.
You need to educate people because it's about all the capabilities that the software has, because they only might see, for example, the 3D capability. They don't see much more beyond that.
But that's part of the implementation.
Yeah, so you have to teach them what you can, you know, create out of it and give the client, right? The time efficiencies. Yes, at the beginning, it might
that
be more time.
That return on that investment.
Yes, exactly. It's profit. So companies worry about the money, right?
Of course.
It's profit.
That's what it is. Yep.
So you have to give them numbers. They have to be able to see it somehow. Not just tell them, but show them, okay, we have this success story, like you said, a project. Look how much money was saved versus had you done it the typical way, you know, traditional way. So that's what they need to see.
And it's not the return just per se on, you know, the GC or the design team. It's really like, how does that impact the client? Mm-hmm. What does it save them to?
Because in the end, they pay for the entire project.
They do.
So if the consultant and the contractor can collaborate smoothly, if we have less errors, like you said, better issue control, so solving things on site faster, it's all benefits for the client.
Yes. And if it is a repeat client, that's even better, because then you can reuse that information.
And how do you get that repeat client? You effectively deliver the project.
Yes.
Yep. And what we're trying to do with that technology is trying to supplement what we've always done. We're just trying to do it more efficiently.
Yes. And when you talk about what it takes to have a good implementation, it's all about that knowledge transfer or that, like you said, trial and error, testing the system. Yes. So it's usually different phases. The recommendation is start small, so you don't have fear of, you know, so if you have, let's say, 10 projects, choose your smaller project and do it there. And you'll have a learning curve, of course, but if you work with experts and technical experts in the field, you can reduce that learning curve.
And you really have to understand the company that you work for, whether it's a large company, whether it's a small company, but even so, how they implement their procurement of technology. And I think that's one of the things you see a lot of people that are in a younger generation that's ready to take this forward, but they got to get approval. It doesn't, everything doesn't just, you know, say, yep, I want that new shiny thing. It's kind of like that car that's sitting over there on the side of the road. I want it. But then when you're told, like, why? That's a really big question of technology. Like, Yeah, it's not just no. I'm not telling you no. I'm telling you what is the workflow that you are trying, and the process that you are trying to solve to make you more efficient. That's what it is. I mean, if not, and it's not making you more efficient, why am I going to give you the money to go do it?
I would say nowadays it's not only about the return on investment hard numbers, which always has been. It's also about, let's say, the market presence, the perception. You know, if a company, you know, if you have three contractors, like you said, and one of them is ahead of the game with technology, with everything, the client will want to work with them more than the others because they see that they're moving, they're evolving. So that has some value as well, I guess, maybe winning more work, maybe.
What's your opinion on that?
Yes. And you know, when you are trying or others are trying to create a specific task, right? And you tell them or they want a new software. What are you trying to achieve? Like you said, I can show you a way. We already have this implemented that works, or it might be better. Let's try that first. And so that way we know, maybe they're not aware that you can do that already with the software that we have.
And not every implementation is going to go well, right? Because if it did, then we would be right all the time, and we're never right.
It's understandable collaboration as well, I would say. Sometimes the technical aspect is the easier aspect to solve. It's about understanding what's the process and what's the information that you need and have everyone collaborate.
Yeah, when one of the things that I've started to do a lot on the GC side and talking to firms in the area that we work with, Gensler's absolutely one that we do business with, is looking at the different studies that are happening in the industry. There's, you know, in the days of old, the industry has always been one of the oldest industries in the world, and nobody wanted to move forward with it. We've been doing it for thousands of years. Why did we have to move forward? But what they forgot is that we progressed forward, even though it might have been slow. I mean, painfully at times, we progress. And I feel like today, farming is further ahead. And they're older than we are. Like, I don't understand. Like, okay. So if
it's all about water there, I think.
Yeah. It's the way that like we grow food and the process behind that. But like, they're the oldest because we had to eat first and we had to drink. But the third thing was right behind it was shelter. So like, and we haven't progressed the way that they have. And it's frustrating for a new generation of talent that's coming out to the field. Like, you guys are so far behind. Like, what happened in the last 20 years? You know, and we have a big challenge to meet that.
This influences talent as well, like you said, because maybe they'll choose other career paths, other disciplines,
companies,
exactly,
other companies,
because they think, you know, this is shinier or nicer.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's not just about the bottom line of the money that they're making. It's really the benefits of everything as a whole. And that's a larger conversation about, you know, HR and everything like that, that's really towards them, but the technology is a big piece of what drives people to go to different places.
It's evolved. The roles in our industry, these roles didn't exist, 20 years ago?
Easy. No, I mean, so even 5, 10.
There's going to be more. There's going to be new ones in 5 years, I bet.
And the roles are going to change as we progress forward through that, because the technology is pushing that.
That's why when we talk about BIM, I always tell people it's beyond BIM now. Like,
and
we
it's
still
a process.
Use the word.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but
I cannot stand when somebody talks about the model just being the model. It's a process. It's literally the ability to take this process and to solve problems with it. It is a noun and a verb. Like, it's not just one of those things. And it's not a software. That's the other thing that drives you crazy. Oh, yeah. I used that BIM software the other day. I think it was called Revit. You know, it's so frustrating.
Some people will say, I want BIM.
Yes. But they want Revit.
They ask you the difference between BIM and Revit.
Yeah. Like, and it's frustrating because I think it's just been educated the wrong way. And you're not. And that's what I think with this conference and other conferences in the world, that's what they're trying to solve, is trying to take that to the next.
And make it easy to understand. Like you said, we love acronyms in technology for construction.
We love
LOD, BIM. And
we have to explain what they mean. And also a graphic. When we talk about LOD, I say, okay, for example, a wall, right? A wall is LOD 100, can be just a single line drawn, right?
Correct.
You reach the next one, it's the wall, but no specific thickness. So it's something that's easy for them to understand, so that when it gets to a bigger picture, they know what it means.
In conclusion to this technology conversation that we're having, one of the things that you we'll start to see a lot of is that connection between all these technologies. And my final question to both of you is, what do you see the biggest threat to not allowing that to go forward?
That's a good question. We are both thinking.
Well, yeah. I can say one is from a company's point of view, when upper leadership is not supporting the advancement, that is a big block. So,
and do you think that in the past people have stayed on for that and kind of been like, all right, I'm going to stay the course and I'll work my way through this and someday I'll be able to be that person that's a decision maker? I don't think you see that anymore. I think people said, you know what? I've tried. I'm jumping ship. I'll go find.
Mm-hmm. That happens.
Yeah. From my perspective, I would say it's contracts as well.
Yeah.
It's what I see as a threat. Like, it has to change. New types of contracts need to be developed around
more collaborative.
Yes.
Where we're all working together from beginning to end.
Because as I said, the technology can do some things, but if you're trying to guard certain interests or like it's gonna be hard.
The other one can be the licensing process for architects, for example.
No doubt.
That it doesn't include a part of technology, which is very important now.
Correct.
So if they implement that into part of the requirements of what they should know.
Yeah, because that's a really good question, right? Because do you need to have a certification to create design drawings? Or do you need that ability to just stamp it? That's a huge conversation. Mm-hmm. So what's your opinion on that?
You don't necessarily need a stamp because there might be other people who can stamp it for you, right? But there's so many aspects within the industry that people need to learn about.
Yeah, because like a junior architect could start at learning the technology and building that out, and have a principal above them that, you know, stamps it at the end.
Yes.
Signs off on that. That will never change. That has to happen. But it also gives them the ability to learn the technology so that by the time they get to that decision-making process, they understand how
exactly.
It comes together.
It's like we have very sophisticated software now, nowadays, that people need to know constructability in order to use the tools.
Yes.
So those two go hand in hand.
So those skills will be really important in the future. And especially now that everything is changing, we need to focus on what are the skills that we as humans should have. Like you said, soft skills, learning, mm-hmm. this decision-making, common sense, let's say, decisions that are needed. Because sometimes people are afraid, oh, technology, no, now they're going to become the architect. Now the technology is going to design for us. But we need to think about how can we leverage that technology. It's not like a threat, but like how can
and
we
never
create value or make your job easier.
Yes.
Never lose sight of this is a profession that I will continuously learn, that has never changed and never will. The technology is the first steps in learning the industry and then taking those soft skills and engaging in the industry to become a better designer, a better contractor.
Yes.
I want to thank you both for joining us in this hour. Any final thoughts from both of you?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Keep pushing for innovation, always.
Absolutely.
Always keep learning.
And thank you all for joining this hour of the podcast, and we'll see you in the next hour.